And good afternoon. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. A little later today, we'll talk about the image of Baltimore in the national media and how that squares with the image that those of us who live here have of our city. Political leaders and many people on social media have been in a position of defending Baltimore from verbal assaults by President Trump. But that defense has been mounted in full knowledge that our city faces problems that were long in the making and very slow in the solving. So we'll talk about that and get your take on Baltimore in a bit. But first, we learned this morning that the great writer Toni Morrison died Sunday evening at the age of 88. The author of 11 powerful novels, she was the first African-American writer to win the Nobel Prize. She also won the Pulitzer Prize, and in 2012, President Barack Obama awarded her America's highest civilian honor, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. It's Midday Culture Connections, and as always, I'm joined here in Studio A by Dr. Sherry Parks. She is the Vice President of Strategic Initiatives at the Maryland Institute College of Art and the author of Fierce Angels, Living with a Legacy from the Sacred Dark Feminine to the Strong Black Woman. We'll begin today with a conversation about one of America's strongest black women, Toni Morrison, and we'll take your calls and comments about Toni Morrison's work, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org. You can tweet us at @MiddayWYPR, and we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. Hey, Sherry, it's good to see you.
Hi there.
So Toni Morrison, the New York Times described her work with a word that I had to look up to make sure I knew what it meant, incantatory or incantatory, meaning an incantation-like thing, the prose that is kind of magical, that has a magical quality to it, and that's certainly my recollection of reading Toni Morrison. How about you?
Well, and that's interesting because some of the work that she did as an author was to bring in ways of thinking that white America had not seen. And African-American tradition is, I mean, the word in literary work is called magical realism, and it was originally tied to Latinx authors, but that idea that you're walking with the ancestors all the time and that other levels of consciousness working all the time, she made that okay. I remember I have an undergraduate degree in honors in creative writing from Chapel Hill, and a third of my PhD is really juried MFA classes. And I remember the first time I wrote something like that, and my classmates said, "Oh, this person is psychotic." And the professor said, "No, this is like Toni Morrison."
Good for you.
And so while I wasn't, it didn't go through Toni Morrison back to me, but she made it okay. Mm-hmm. And that elevation of black interiority raised to high literature, because before it wasn't. And the idea that African Americans had complex emotions and complex thoughts about things that people saw every day but didn't really think, well, how do black people think about that? Because the perception of black people wasn't that we thought complex thoughts. I mean, the idea that there was such a thing as black interiority shouldn't be a surprise to somebody today, but early in her career, it was.
And the perceptions were often never even heard.
Right.
I mean, it was talk about a marginalized voice. She was an editor early on at Random House, and she did a lot to, promote the work of particularly important black writers or even people that became black celebrities. The autobiography of Muhammad Ali and Angela Davis were shepherded through the publishing process by Toni Morrison.
Well, and that's a huge feat in itself because, of course, those voices don't get heard if they don't get published. And if the readers and the pickers and the editors are not ready to shepherd somebody through, it doesn't exist.
Let's listen to a clip of Toni Morrison reading from perhaps her most famous novel, Beloved. This is from the very beginning of the book, the first chapter. This is Toni Morrison from Beloved.
Then something, the plash of water, the sight of her shoes and stockings awry on the path where she'd flung them, or here boy lapping in the puddle near her feet, and suddenly there was Sweet Home, rolling, rolling, rolling out before her eyes, and although there was not a leaf on that farm that did not make her want to scream, it rolled itself out before her in shameless beauty. It never looked as terrible as it was, and it made her wonder if hell was a pretty place too. Fire and brimstone, all right, but hidden in lacy groves. Boys hanging from the most beautiful sycamores in the world. It shamed her, remembering the wonderful sowing trees rather than the boys. Try as she might to make it otherwise, the sycamores beat out the children every time, and she could not forgive her memory for that. When the last of the chamomile was gone, she went around to the front of the house, collecting her shoes and stockings on the way. As if to punish her further for her terrible memory, sitting on the porch, not 40 feet away, was Paul D., the last of the Sweet Home men. And although she could never mistake his face for another's, she said, "Is that you?"
Incantatory indeed.
Well, I mean, and
that is magical.
and there we have it, because often when we think of something like lynching, we focus on that moment of the horrific. And living in that system meant that among the beauty there was horror. And what does that feel like to move in an everyday sense among the beauty and the horror at the same time? How do you capture that? And she did.
Yeah, boys hanging from the most beautiful sycamore trees in the world. You know, I wondered, it made me wonder if hell was a pretty place too.
Right.
It's just, it's remarkable.
So that twisting of things that we like to keep separate and putting them together and then, and in a way, almost galvanizing them so that you can imagine walking among the beauty every day and the horror that lay within it.
Let's go to the phones to Tracy in Baltimore. Tracy, welcome to Midday with Dr. Sherry Parks.
Hello, thank you. I just wanted to say, this is such a terrible occurrence in my life, but I'm just so grateful for Johnny Morrison. Her book, Beloved, was assigned to me for my first term paper when I was 17 years old. And I, to this day, describe that as the day I became a woman. I thought I was a reader before then, but she really challenges her reader to be engaged in a way that no other author I have known requires of us.
Oh, that's beautiful, Tracy. That's terrific. That was the moment you became a woman, reading Toni Morrison.
Well, and
that's beautiful.
I think I understand that, because if you think about what becoming a woman is, to embrace the fierceness, would you kill your child in order to keep them from being a slave? That is a pretty profound question and really gets at the bottom of what it means to birth a child.
Yeah. And Tracy, isn't it something how when the loss of a writer like this happens, when we hear about this passing, how it affects us in a visceral way?
Yeah. I remember the last interview I heard of her, and I was like, I feel like we're losing her. And when I got the call this morning from a friend of mine who knows so much I love her, I was like, you know, it made sense to me. I didn't want her to be in pain. But, it just feels like a traumatic loss right now. I mean, and
yeah,
that the mass shootings happened as she was leaving, and I hate that was one of her last experiences on the earth.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for calling, Tracy. I really appreciate it. Let's go to Zizi in Baltimore. Zizi, welcome to Midday.
Oh, yes. Hi. I just wanted to say that I was actually at my school, and I came upon one of Toni Morrison's books called God Help the Child. It's one of her last recent novels, and I love that book so much because she talks about colorism, which is a topic that is not really addressed that much in the Black community. And as a dark-skinned Black girl, I felt heard, and I felt listened to, I felt represented, and I felt supported by her in her writing, and I felt proud of who I am, and I just wanted to say thank you to her. I know she's not here anymore, but she really meant a lot to me. So
that's beautiful, Zizi. Thank you so much. Feeling heard, as you were saying, Sherry Parks, that's such a big part of her legacy, getting people to be heard and heard in a unique and extraordinary way.
Well, and to be heard, as when the passage she read, to be heard amongst beauty. I mean, she was an excellent writer, and to see yourself represented one way, but to see it taken so intelligently and so beautifully and handled so gently. I mean, because she clearly, with some of her writing, was not gentle. She was not, you know, a weak person or a weak thinker. And anybody who was ever in the room with her would not come away with that impression. But that Zizi was handled carefully is really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, as Black women, it's easy to see the resonance, and it's easy to see how this writer is so crucial and so important and so viscerally beautiful. But as a average white man, it was incredibly
average.
Well, I'm below average, but the power of that prose to me, and the insight into those perspectives and those beautiful minds that she conjured, those moral dilemmas, you know, killing your child to avoid a life of enslavement, those kinds of important moral dilemmas. One of the experiences I personally recall is in 2008, a book called A Mercy came out. And my daughter, Miranda, gave me the book for Christmas. And 2008 was a rough year for me. I'd been diagnosed with cancer. I'd been operated on. I was cured. Everything was all good. Everything was fine. But Christmas time was always a very busy time because I would do 40 concerts,
yeah, right,
you know, in the 2 months prior to the Christmas. And by the time I get to Christmas Day, I was crashing. And I sat on the couch that Christmas Day and I read A Mercy. And I didn't get up from the couch until I finished the book. It was so powerful. But just being in the presence of that artistry, that the presence of the power of that prose was a wonderful experience.
Why do you think your daughter gave that book to you?
I don't know. Maybe because at the time it was the new Toni Morrison novel.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, it could have been that, you know. But I just... And it doesn't even matter what the book was about. It doesn't even matter what my personal situation was. It's just the experience of being in the proximity of that genius was for me just so profound.
And it's interesting, the connection to choral arts, because there are many writers, when you are in conversation with them, they're an individual. With Toni Morrison, it was very much like being in a symphonic environment. There were all these voices and all these feelings and this tapestry. You used that word a minute ago. It was very obvious.
No, you're exactly right. That's really insightful. So Toni Morrison died Sunday night, according to her publicist, at the age of 88. We're going to take a break and we'll come back and we will talk about the subject that we originally planned to discuss today, the image of Baltimore, our city, in the national media in the context of President Trump's very impolite tweets. We'll have more with Midday Culture Connections when we come back from a break. 410-662-8780 to join our conversation. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWIPR. And we are streaming on the WIPR Facebook page. We're going to talk about our hometown when we come back. Stay with us.